Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Mind Money Motion, where we focus on worrying less about money by keeping our mind and body healthy. My guests will help you have a positive, active brain, use money as a tool, and stay physically active so you can enjoy less worry and more life. I want to thank my co-sponsor, Women's Enterprise Foundation, for helping to make this program possible. And I'm your host, Marie Burns, a certified financial planner, speaker, best-selling author, and owner of Mind Money Motion, which is not only the name of this podcast, but also of my education business. Joining me today is Cindy Gordon, founder of Business Rescue Coaching. I have invited her as my money guest today, but as we shall see, there is often crossover. Cindy is the owner of Business Rescue Coaching, where she helps women earn what they're worth and achieve financial independence. Love their mission, which is to close the gender income gap by offering workshops for women business owners, as well as executive mastermind groups to share best practices. And under my motion subtopic today, my guest is Kathleen Gramsci, the owner of Kinesage, where she is a mind performance and self-care expert, speaker, educator, 20-year board-certified massage therapist, and developer of the Kinesage Release Your Pain self-care system. Thank you, ladies, both for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
You know, when we talked about sharing information on this program, the overlap between money, Cindy, and mind came to my mind. And Kathleen, the motion, as well as the mind, is kind of a common denominator. I'm sure you both find, as you are talking with groups or individuals, you see that overlap with the money or the mind or the motion or the mind as well. And Cindy, I'd like to hear your take on how you find that to be true when you are speaking and working with women.
Absolutely. And working with myself.
There you go.
You know, the overlap for me, I see a lot of the mind and the money aspects, specifically around limiting beliefs, how our mind can overtake us and limit us from taking really important actions in our business, in our life, that really can accelerate our success. Women in particular can hold themselves back just because of these limiting beliefs that are probably not even true, but they hold it as their truth.
So often I hear this limiting beliefs idea, and yet when we are meeting other women in particular, the idea that they are not confident or have these worries in the back of their mind is usually quite surprising, because they certainly appear to have it all together and are very successful in what they're doing, but that self-doubt or those limiting beliefs seem to be a common denominator no matter what a woman is, a business owner or not. What would you say are some classic signs that, yes, in fact, we are?
Absolutely. And, it doesn't just apply to women who aren't successful. Women who are successful,
right,
have the limiting beliefs also.
Mm-hmm.
And I always talk about that upper limit. Right? You see successful women come to this limit of income and they stop themselves. They say, that's good enough. Or, hey, I've made it. They're doing great, a couple of $100,000 income, whatever it is. But they stop themselves and start making up excuses. If I make more money, I won't have time for my family, or I won't have time for myself, or, my life will change if I take it to the next level. This is good enough.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it doesn't just apply to women who are struggling to get that success.
That's a great point, because I think that is the assumption, is that limiting beliefs are only for those that haven't made it yet.
Absolutely.
So,
we all struggle with them. And it's just a matter of having some tools to realize, because they're part of our unconsciousness. We don't even realize that we're having it. And like I said before, we hold them as our truth. So if we can bring awareness to them and be empowered to choose, is this what I want to hold as my reality, or is something else going to serve me better?
How do you think that is such a common denominator, or why, for women in general, that we do have this? I mean, we talk about it like it's more of a gender-specific challenge. And I would agree that's what I've seen as well. But why? Where do we think that kind of came from originally as to how and why we are like that?
So, yes, and we tend to stereotype that this is a female mm-hmm. issue, but there are a lot of men who deal with it also. But I think we see it more prevalent in women. And our beliefs come from, you know, people that have influenced us, our life experiences. And they can really stop us. So we can have an experience that, you know, my go-to experience is, you know, having that prospecting cold call. You know, you pick up the phone, you call somebody, you try to tell them about what you do and how it could be so beneficial. And they go, thank you, no. Right. And mm-hmm. all of a sudden, just from that one little experience, we can create this belief that this is not the greatest way for me to get potential clients. This is not right for me. There's better ways. I should go out and network. I should go back into my comfort zone. Right. And that changes the whole landscape of our potential. Right. So where does this come from? It comes from our life experiences. It comes from sometimes people that have influenced us. And again, not in an intentional way to hold us back, but, you know, just, I mean, I'm doing a presentation on Friday and I'm talking about how when I was a kid, my dad used to say, if I was smart, I was rich, I'd be mm-hmm. rich. And it was only because he never had the opportunity to get an education. Mm. So he encouraged us to get an education. And I held that belief in my professional career. I became an accountant, a Canadian CPA. I didn't excel in the profession. And to me, I didn't feel like I was smart in the industry of accounting to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
So that just innocent little saying that my father had because of his life experience became my truth, my belief.
I find that to be, I think each one of us, if we think back to childhood, it might be just one little flash, one little sentence, one little incident that the adult in the situation probably thought nothing of. And yet it scarred you, it marked you, it stuck with you through the rest of your life to today. I remember reading about brain physiology and brain development and the whole, you know, we all talk about little children are a sponge, right? They listen and then they repeat back what they hear. Up until about the age of 7, truly, the brain is a sponge where it absorbs everything, conversations, events, environment, with no filters.
Exactly.
So that becomes the problem, right? There is no, oh, this is a good message, this is a bad message, because you got a message from your father that stuck with you, and then that became your limiting belief.
Yeah.
Kathleen, I would imagine in your work with people physically, you are seeing childhood impacts today, or the whole mind aspect of maybe their limitations on the physical side of their life.
Well, coming in as a massage therapist 20 years ago, I entered the body-mind world through the body side, mm-hmm. right? So people came in with physical issues, and I quickly learned that the body doesn't just hold impacts of physical experience, but mental and emotional ones. And so I am a science geek, anatomy and kinesiology, which is movement, and just the whole brain science. So for me, I wanted to understand, I was both fascinated because how is it that people had no physical reason, quote unquote, for their back pain or for headaches, and yet they had financial stress, they had relationship stress, they had issues that were affecting them and bothering them that... One of the beautiful things about having the experience of being a massage therapist is you really learn holistically how to view a person. So it's body, mind, and spirit. And when you look at that, so the spirit side of me loved that. And then the science side of me said, okay, I actually need to understand this on a neurological level, what's happening. So when you talk about the experiences that you have, there is not only a physical piece to it, but the emotions that we feel under certain conditions. When you heard your dad saying that, right? You honored your dad, you respected him. I'm sure you loved him dearly. And so we put so much credence into people in our lives and our influence, we do not realize that the emotional impact is really creating chemicals. Emotions are chemicals in our bodies. So the relationship of how strong something affects us, either in the positive, and it's like a great experience that sears in for life, or a negative experience that sears in for life. So those are the things that have a bigger impact, because the nervous system is designed to pay attention to things that could impact our survival. So that is why those little comments that have big impact on us emotionally sear into the brain. And then we look for other reasons or other similarities. The brain does. It has a neural net. And similar thoughts have similar frequencies, which pick up like magnets. And so next thing you know, you got this big story about why you could never be successful. And it has nothing to do back to that one initial thread. So it, to me, the body-mind, we are one health, right? There is no separating mental health from emotional health, from physical health, because they all impact each other. And that's what's so exciting when you understand that with the body. And when I started understanding the impact of the heart and our emotions on the brain, and then that actually leads what the brain does in terms of how coherent it is, how clearly you can think, how cooperatively you can work with someone, how safe you feel, which affects everything and colors everything. When you understand that, then you can actually start to use those, you know, use that understanding and work with your body mind. So that's what really the expansion of my last 20 years has been, first helping people with their physical issues as a massage therapist. Then it was teaching other therapists so they could have self-care for themselves to clear their own pain and then work with others. And then when I came into the corporate world, back into the corporate world in 2015, when I saw the opioid addiction epidemic getting so bad, what I realized was, yeah, 74% of the people have musculoskeletal issues, but 100% are chronically overstressed, virtually. And when you understand what stress does to the nervous system, now you understand why, quote, bad managers are not necessarily bad managers. They could just be in fight or flight, or why people don't collaborate, or couples, right? When you talk about financial situations, and you can see the differences when you're working with people together. So we have all these, we just have this survival system that is really governing virtually so much of who we are on a regular basis when we're in an automatic pilot. And it's fun to know we can switch it.
Who knew that science was behind it all?
Exactly.
Right? But that whole chemical release by thoughts.
Yes.
I remember hearing you speak a couple of months ago, and that was something that just was, I think I knew, I think I read that. I'm sure I had it in biology way back somewhere along the line, or anatomy. But the realization of how that plays through in your daily life. Mm-hmm. So, Cindy, when you are dealing with people that have these limiting beliefs, right? And those beliefs are triggering chemicals. How do you help them get past those limiting beliefs then?
So I have a whole slew of different tools. And one of my favorite is creating an image of a beast, a gremlin. Sometimes I call it the crazy lady in our mind. And creating this persona that you can attach that limiting belief to, right? And it's very empowering for people, men and women, to be able to separate the limiting beliefs from their self. So my persona, my gremlin, her name is Ivy, and her full name is Poison Ivy, but she doesn't like to tell people that. And, you know, I have a visual of her. And I can, when I'm encountering hesitance in my life, right? Should I, shouldn't I do that? No, don't do that. Or, you know, I always get this like getting ready to go to a 5 o'clock networking event. And Ivy will sort of whisper in my ear, oh, you've had a really long day. Aren't you tired? You know, doesn't the sofa look really comfy? And I'm like, yeah, it really does. But if I separate that comment from myself and put it onto her, huh, wait a second. I want to go to that networking event because there's probably at least three or four people that I need to meet and they're going to be there. So get your butt off the sofa. Shouldn't have been there in the first place. And let's get moving. And it's so empowering to be able to choose what you want to do. Do you want to believe that? Do you want to hold that as your truth? Or do you want to put it onto Ivy's shoulder or whoever your inner voice and inner gremlin is and do what's in your best interest?
So you are, in essence, helping someone by creating this persona, remove the emotion. I think about, I have four children, and I remember one of the parenting approaches that we took was to distinguish between the behavior and the person.
Exactly.
So always trying to help them understand, I don't dislike you, I dislike your behavior, not you personally. So your persona is removing emotion, therefore judgment on myself. Brilliant.
Yes, I
love the tool concept.
Absolutely.
I'm a money tool person. If we can just think of money as a tool, we remove the emotion.
Yep.
We don't stimulate as much chemical production of these things that are not going to be healthy for us, and life is better.
But it's funny that you talk about our children, because I actually had the opportunity to see my daughter use this tool. So I was studying the whole gremlin concept when she was about 6 years old. And we went on a family vacation, and I told the kids that I had signed them up for like this kids camp, and they were going to play mini golf and everything. And my daughter she still is very bubbly, very talkative. And we went for lunch before this mini golf tea time, and she was sitting at the table so quiet. And I said, Allie, what's wrong with you? She looks at me. She goes, Mommy, my gremlin is telling me that I won't be able to find you after we finish playing golf. And I thought that was just so wonderful. I said, Allie, what do you want to tell your gremlin? And she stopped and she thought, and she stood up, she put her hands on her hips, and she goes, Gremlin, my mommy and daddy are always there for me. So be quiet. I'm going to have fun with my brother.
Wow.
That's fabulous.
What an amazing
learning
lesson.
How empowering is that?
Mm-hmm.
So this tool is available to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, I'm like a total supporter of it. And it's fun.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
It is fun. And it does really work, because when you can separate what those thoughts are and what those beliefs are from who you are, you're creating that space for awareness. And it's in that pause that we can change, right? When we're just working off our automatic pilot. So if you're not aware that that gremlin is talking, then you're just going to go, yeah, I'm into the couch. There we go.
That's my truth. Exactly.
Yes.
Yep.
And when you have a tool to separate who you're being from what you're hearing in your head, then you have the opportunity to make a different choice. And that's everything. It's really creating the space to make the choice.
That goes back to the brain, right? Again, because they say we have lazy brains. 90%+ of our decisions are made by our automatic brain, which involves no thinking, which is why we make a lot of poor choices, even though we know about a lot of this. And unless there's an interruption to kick you into the other side of the brain where it's not automatic, to make an intentional action.
What's really beautiful about that process is the automatic or the autonomic nervous system, we're designed to put everything on automatic on purpose, right? Because if we had to rethink, how do I brush my teeth, or how do I tie my shoe, or, well, now we just Velcro, but whatever it is, right? We would spend all day trying to relearn. So when we understand, we can actually use that to our advantage, though, because we are, as Aristotle said, that we are what we most habitually do. Right. So therefore, excellence is not an act, rather it's a habit. So the great thing about inertia is when we understand this, we can actually put it into our experience. So I started working out when I was 18. And I mean, part of that, I was a kid, I was on my bike, I was doing jumping rope, playing outside. I think we really had an advantage growing up because there was a whole lot more activity that we did. Our entertainment wasn't on a device.
Right.
Our entertainment was outside.
Amen.
So we really had a blessing, I feel, in that, because that established that habit of movement in me. And then at 18, I decided, I learned that 20 minutes of jumping rope equaled an hour of running. And I actually didn't really love running, so I thought this is perfect. And so fast forward all these years later, I still jump rope a couple times a week. And I have seen in my own life how that habit that I started, which was I just, you know, 20 minutes, you know, big deal. Well, when you talk about decades later, that I'm the same size I have been all, you know, over 25 years, that I'm, you know, my same measurements over that time, that's a tribute to habit, right? That is, it doesn't mean I'm not more special than anybody else, but our capacity for our brain and our bodies to work together when we're in here and we are programming them, we're directing them, we're directing our thoughts, we're directing what we want to have, and we can actually create different emotions. If we don't like feeling upset or depressed about money or sitting in that pool of what was me, what's ever going to, like, you know, projecting the bad to continue to create the bad, we can actually spend time and you work with the nervous system, work with our subconscious mind and be able to reprogram it. So these tools are so powerful. And the biggest thing I really think is that we, the exciting piece is that every day, anytime you choose, you can change your life because you can choose.
Never too late. I have a question for Kathleen, because there is such a direct connection to movement and emotion. I mean, when I exercise, I feel so good, right?
Yes.
And, you know, I'd love for you to speak more about just being in the habit of motion. What is the impact on limiting beliefs? Can they sort of fade away because it just puts you into this positive energy and positive frame of mind?
Great connection. So you see that relationship between your thoughts and your movement. And this is another advantage, right? We know that it's good for our heart. It's good for our physical. You can, you know, list all the health reasons, but it simply feels better. And the reason why it feels better is we are designed to move. We're designed to move. Health is predicated on movement. So when we move, now the chemicals are endorphins, right? So we can shift our mood just by moving, right? Going for a walk. It doesn't have to be, you don't have to run a marathon. Like you say, get up off the couch, walk around the block after dinner. It changes your perception because it changes the hormones that are released. It changes the chemicals that are released. Whether you're, when you're in a negative mood, it's actually releasing more, like 1,400 chemicals in your body that are more of that. So if you're feeling anger, you're feeling frustration, you're feeling irritation. Have you ever noticed that when you're in a bad mood, it can get worse?
In a heartbeat.
Like down the spiral, right?
In a heartbeat,
yes,
absolutely.
It's crazy how quick it can be.
Yeah.
And when we can see that, we can say, you know what? Even if you don't feel like doing anything else, but you're saying, I'm just going to go for a walk. Let me just walk around the block. And look at it. As soon as you go outside, as soon as you look at the stars, you know, if you just give yourself that one impetus to move, then your body's supporting you. You're like, yes, good. You got up off the couch. This is great. We like this, right? And it rewards you with endorphins. It rewards you feeling better.
I think I have to add this to my workshop. That movement,
yes,
piece,
oh, yes,
as a tool to get out of your limiting mindset.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
And how much fun could this be? You know, it's like, let's put on music and dance. Or,
yes.
You know, there's so many ways of just lifting your spirits up and getting rid of that limiting belief. I
yes.
love it.
In fact, there's another one that your workshop, the Secrets of Six Figure Women, is excellent. Everyone, I can tell you for a fact, I'm taking it. And she is delightful in her facilitation, and it's great information. So one of the things is when we think about music and how music impacts us, right? Because that's an emotion, right? If you think about everybody who really loves you think about your favorite, Brie, what's your favorite music? What era is it from in your life?
I'm pretty open to a lot of different types, but I would probably say 70s, you know, pop, top 40 kind of stuff.
Was it when you were in your teens?
Yeah.
Is your favorite music is when you were in your teens?
No.
No?
Current stuff.
Okay, cool.
I try to keep up and I just like anything that just lifts me up and gets me to, I love dancing.
Me too.
Yep.
Me too.
Love dancing.
Yep. The reason why I ask about when, if you, they did a study and most people, when they say what their favorite music is, like when it thinks what made, like what they think of their memories of their life, it's when you were a teenager. And it doesn't matter what generation, it's when you were a teenager. And the question is, why is that? It's when your hormones were flowing, right? And everything was really important. Mm. Like, and you're like teenagers, right? Everything is really magnified, important. And the music that soothed us, that made us feel better, that made us happy, is usually from that time. So, and that's the one where people have a natural disposition towards the music of their teenage years or whatever that was in their period of time where, like,
that
was their thing. Yeah.
Interesting.
So having a power song, right? So having a song that uplifts you is a great way when you're, if you're, I actually like to do it before I do my budgets. Honestly, that's what I do. I put on my favorite music before I'm doing budgeting and finance because while it's...
What's the limiting belief there, right?
Well, I want to make it more fun. There is no question that my gremlin has a very big limiting belief that it's a pain. And I have worked on that so that I can actually enjoy it. So awesome. I feel good about doing the tasks I need to do to have a better financial life.
So cool. I love that.
Cindy, tell us more just because we talked about it and now I want to be sure I'm understanding the opportunity with the Secrets of Six-Figure Women. You have a new class coming up starting?
So yes, I start classes every 2 weeks.
Oh,
and it's great. A 10-week program. Mm-hmm. So thank you for asking about it. And it is geared more towards women to help them see themselves as, you know, being financially successful. And we spend about the first 4 weeks. So we meet for a 10-week period once every week for an hour. It's held via Zoom. So it's a virtual platform where anybody can join from anywhere. And it's convenient
mm-hmm.
Because we as women wear so many different hats. We just need to focus in on here's a specific time and let's turn everything else off. But we spend the first 4 weeks talking about the tools that can help us get over our mind. You know, how can we get past our limiting beliefs, our mindset? What are different tools that we can create for ourselves to help us stay focused on being our best, achieving our goals and exceeding, you know, just making the best life for ourselves. And then in week 5, we set a goal for ourselves. And it is about moving yourself forward in your life. So where are you now? What is the first step I can take to move forward to where I want to be? And then over the remaining 5 weeks, we talk about different strategies that are endemic to women's success. And a lot of them have to do with the rules that men play by that make them successful in business. That if women play the same way, they're called one of the three B's.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the three B's is they're a bitch, they're bossy, or they're a bad mother. So let's get over that stigma and find out how can we use these strategies in a way that's authentic to us. And in the meanwhile, we're also learning different leadership principles that are also intuitive to women.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole process is just so empowering. The results that I have seen have blown my mind in the transformations that some of the participants have gone through. Absolutely amazing.
What do you find? You know, there's a lot there. What do you find is the biggest hurdle if you had to identify one area that stops women from that financial success?
So we talk about, you know, you read in the paper, women don't have access to capital. So as business owners, they can't grow their business. You talk about women in corporate America, how motherhood sets them back financially and the career path. But at the end of the day, it comes down to mindset. It comes down to those beliefs that we hold and how we stop ourselves from being successful, from taking those steps that are really important, from going into the boss's office and say, hey, let's talk about my career path here. Let's talk about my desire to be a VP in this organization and to make $250,000 within the next 3 years. You know, we talk about women who stop themselves from picking up the phone and calling prospects, from raising their prices as business owners because they have this limiting belief that they might lose clients. Well, at the end of the day, yes, you're going to lose clients if you raise your prices, but you're going to end up making more money because people are going to be paying you more and you're worth it. So, you know, these are the limiting beliefs that women have to have tools to help them get past so they can truly be successful.
Awesome. And I love the persona. Poison Ivy, I will never forget that. Now, every time I hear that, I'm going to think, oh, that's somebody's gremlin.
That's right. That's right.
So the good news is we have the ability with the mindset to overcome that most common denominator hurdle of not achieving financial success. But then it's all about the tools.
Absolutely. And so one of the tools we talk about is, okay, one of the strategies. So we get the tools to help us get past the mindset, talked about one of them. And then we look at strategies. So when you talk to a man, right, and they're dealing with something in the workplace, they're the first ones to speak up. Research has shown that in business meetings, men speak 75% of the time. Mm. They don't stop themselves. And that's awesome. We need to learn from that, mm-hmm. right? Women need to start speaking up for themselves. What does that look like, right? It might look like different things for each person, but we have to own that strategy. We have to own that ability to speak up for ourselves.
Kathleen, you must see that a lot in the corporate space where you do a lot of worksite wellness kinds of trainings and...
Yeah, it's really interesting. I have been working even more really now in the performance space, because what we see is that stress really impedes people's ability to perform, to mentally think clearly, to be collaborative, especially in like middle management. They're really, I call it the stress sandwich. They're stuck in between the C-suite with all of the objectives and goals, and they are then sandwiched in between carrying that out and carrying it out through employees. And so when you're talking about having the tools, just like you have Ivy the gremlin on the other side, we actually have our body minds, which is your best friend. Because when you understand, just like to your point about having that ability to observe and see what's going on, when you can see yourself getting angry or frustrated or overwhelmed, you can actually, there are tools that I teach that teach people how to switch their nervous system out of this fight or flight or overwhelm into the restoration side of the nervous system, where on a cellular level, it can repair itself. You get better sleep. You're a lot more social. In fact, it's the social engagement side. People don't realize that when they're angry or upset or overwhelmed, they physiologically cannot hear when people are trying to assist them because their nervous system is in threat mode. Mm. Literally, the frequency that your ears can hear is tuned into lower vibration frequency or deeper tone. So when people understand, I am in here, I have a mind, I have a heart, and I have a body, I'm not any one of those. I'm in here and I can direct those. Now you have a tool to be able to really take dominion over yourself. Now you have greater control over your mindset. Now you have greater control over your what's going on for your heart rate. It works with your autonomic, right? This automatic side of the nervous system. Mm-hmm. It actually, you can direct it. You can direct it to be, you can have greater heart resilience. So why heart rate variability? And what that means is when we have, they used to say that if you had your heart rate, if they looked on the graph, right, they're graphing your heart and you're watching it beat and you're just watching the lines. If they were equal and even, then you had a strong heart rate. In actuality, it's you don't want them to be all the same, because it means that you are not resilient. You can't adapt to change. So I work with first responders. And so no one deals with more trauma or more stress than they do. And so they have a lot of incidents of sudden cardiac death. They have high rates of depression. They have high rates of suicide. Mm. And those emotions, those experiences are the end of the spectrum, right? The far end of the spectrum of starting out thinking, I don't feel good. This is a bad day. And it's this conditioning of the body and the conditioning of the mind. So you don't have to be a first responder to have those feelings, right? You don't have to be a first responder to think that my life's just getting worse and worse and worse, and then have more emotions about it and then more feelings and then behaviors, right? So, you know, I mean, there's a reason why you look at the people's go-tos, coffee, right? I'm going to start with coffee in the morning. Okay, I got an extra meeting. I got a meeting. I'm going to do a couple extra cups of coffee because this is going to be stressful. Let me get just set up. Okay, and then it's 10 o'clock. Okay, I want a little something. I need a little distraction. Okay, that donut. Yes, a little sugar fix. That'd be good. And then at lunch, oh, I got to comfort myself. I just had a bad conversation with somebody. Oh my God, it was really rough. I'm going to go get a burger and fries and the Coke too. And then it's, 3 o'clock. Oh, 3 o'clock. I need, you know what? I got 3 more hours. I am dragging. I'm going to go get another little help. Oh, it's one of these drinks. And it's called an energy drink. And they can call it that because it could be all sugar, caffeine. But if they put a little B12 in there, now it's an energy drink. You can get wings, right? And then you're at the end of your day. Oh my God, it's been a hell of a day. And it's time for a cocktail.
You are in everyone's mind. We are all nodding our heads. What the?
Well, what the is right, because guess what? I have been on that circle, and I know when I'm choosing those things. Like, you know, now I've gotten smart about it. But there was a time in my life that was my cycle, period. Mm-hmm. Minus maybe the donuts, but still, there was other sugar. It must have been cookies. There you go. So, you know, but we are always looking outside of ourselves, and we are putting stuff into our bodies to give us a stimulation, rather than knowing that we actually are in control in here, and I can switch my nervous system and I can create more energy by virtue of the system I've been given.
So you know, we're all agreeing and recognize, yes, guilty, guilty. Just like you said, we don't even need to hear more detail. Guilty as spoken.
We're just aware, right? It's just like, that's what we've been taught. That's what socially,
sure.
Look at how socially
acceptable.
Well, exactly. It's not only socially acceptable, it's promoted.
Right.
It's promoted.
Well, there's a whole nother marketing topic, right?
Exactly.
That's why they do it.
Yes.
So they know it works.
Because they know it affects people's moods,
right? Science and marketing. Absolutely.
Right.
So the question then is, what are the skills? What are the tools then that people need to be aware of and then act on to get that healthier lifestyle? Because this is also easy to spiral down the wrong direction.
Exactly. So the simplest things are doing things that you know that can make a difference. So breathing. Right, taking slower, deeper breaths, just slower, deeper breaths than you normally do. And if you did 5 of them or 6 of them, so you're doing it in a minute's time. So if you breathe in for 5, out for 5, and you did it 6 times in a minute, that would improve your nervous system. That would help to start switching you over. Moving is the other thing. Get up and just go for a walk. Even literally just standing up at your desk, if you stood up, even if you're so on a movement sedentary thing, if you did it once an hour, that would be brilliant. And if you just needed to get some energy, you could knock on your head. You could take your knuckles and knock on your head. And that will stimulate your brain. That'll stimulate circulation. So there's a lot of little simple things that we can do just in general that you can help to improve your mood. Put your favorite music on. It really can't be sad country music, though. That will not help. It will not work. It needs to be something uplifting. Right. So it has to be something uplifting. But put something on. Or here's the other thing is we are designed to help each other re-regulate by smiling. Our nervous systems are designed to look at each other's faces and look for safety. So when we look at someone we love, spend time with the people you love who have your back. That be out in nature. That's the other one. If you're in nature, that is a natural nervous system reset.
Wow. Awesome. Yeah. So love the simpleness, the simplicity of what you are saying. When you talked about breathing, that makes me think about, you know, you probably your grandparents or your parents always told you, when you're angry, count to 10. And I got to thinking about that because what are you doing when you're counting to 10? Well, first of all, you're emotional and upset, so you're breathing. You're stomping around, you're storming around, counting to 10. So what is that doing? It's that breathing, resetting the brain, like you just said.
Resetting the heart.
All of the above. So the wisdom, again, in the old wives'
tale kinds
of things.
They knew so much about what they were talking about.
Oh,
they really did.
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely. And the movement side of things, look how sedentary we are as a society.
Correct.
And in the corporate space, I'm excuse me, assuming you're seeing more of those, what do they call
them?
Sit-stand desks? Mm-hmm. Or?
Yes, that is true. So things are getting better that way. The other thing is though, when you talk about generations, we had the benefit of moving, right? For we were not sitting for the hours that we're sitting today. And when you think about the entertainment, so if you talk about, you know, Gen Z and primarily being all the entertainment being on a device. So we become our habits, right? So if you are sitting with your head down, flexed down, and you are doing that repeatedly for hours at work, and then you spend your entire time on your phone or your device, your body's habits are actually forming. So what I see is that younger people have the postures of elders now because your body gets used to whatever you do, you just think about it magnified, right? Mm-hmm. It's over time. So when we think of a senior's and elder's posture stooped over, pelvis tilted, the head's down, you know, a little necks forward. If you look now and you just go outside or, you know, be in the mall or be in a coffee shop and look at the postures of younger people, and it's so important for them to get more movement because the fascia and how your body becomes its habits, right? So it's, you get that muscle memory. It works in the negative as well. So that's really, really important. So to doing things like, if we're always forward with our arms forward, just simply taking your arms behind your back and clasping your hands behind your back and taking them down your back to open up your shoulders, to open up your chest, to open up your breathing.
The whole ergonomics of sitting at your desk, right?
Yes.
The chair and the leg angle and...
Yes. But most people actually, you know, now that we have a lot of more open style sitting, I mean, there's better ergonomics in terms of furniture, and it doesn't mean that people just don't still slouch and,
right,
you know, flex. So it's again, that awareness of just get up and go get a glass of water. Like, just get up, move, put a little sticky.
I remember talking, you talk about, we grew up with movement and today's generation doesn't nearly as much. I remember talking to a gentleman who's probably 82 right now, and he was just recognizing that they walked or biked everywhere, uh-huh, as a kid. And he was noting that so many of his grandchildren are having sports injuries. And he said, we never had sports injuries because I think it was because we were on our legs using our muscles repeatedly as, you know, a regular daily occurrence. Whereas a lot of times kids today are active when they're in their sport.
Yes.
And then it's an overuse sport injury. So that seems...
Yeah, because they're not actually been conditioned.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
Because conditioning is all the time. You're getting conditioned one way or the other. So how many hours are you getting conditioned as improper balance in your body where, you know, your certain muscles are being tense and the other ones are overstretched,
mm-hmm,
you know, in an imbalance. How many hours of that during your day is happening versus the hour or two that you do the sport?
Right. So
yeah,
you can see how that can spiral out of control in a hurry. So I'm curious, you know, as we're both talking, all three of us talking about the money side, the mindset side, the physical side, so much of what we learn in this subject area in particular, I think, because it impacts us no matter who we are, what our occupation, what our income level, it's because it's mind and body related, is what do we do with all this information? I think awareness is huge. And that's a big effort of this podcast, is to try to be sure that the awareness is out there and we're sharing great information that we either knew or forgot or never knew. But then the next piece is, and now what do we do about it? So I know I read the book Nudge once, and I reread some of the key things again recently. And the whole concept of that was, we tend to make short-term decisions. You know, what's important or how I feel today and tomorrow versus, I know I need to exercise regularly for long-term health. I know I need to do these important things as a business owner for financial success down the road. But our brain is lazy and makes quick decisions. It's all about short-term things. That's where the marketing people take advantage of that. So the whole concept of nudge is for yourself. How do you set it up to make it easy,
that's right,
to do those habits, or the employer to make it a non-decision? You have to act to change the decision. And of course, in the money world, I automatically think of automatic enrollment in a 401k. You're a new employee, you're automatically in the 401k.
Yes.
Can you get out of it? Absolutely, yes. But you have to sign a form versus you have to sign a form to get into it.
Correct. Yes.
So any nudge suggestions for either of you to help women act on this motion and mind and money aspect of what you see when you're working with clients?
Yes. For me, there's two things. Just in general, it really does come down to self-awareness and discipline, really, because you have to decide that something's important enough to change the inertia ball, go in the other direction. So it needs to be something that matters to you, and you have to have a reason why it matters. So just to be healthy because I know I'm supposed to be isn't enough reason. If you want to be able to go to Europe and walk all over Europe and enjoy it, that might be a reason. Or if you actually want to be there for your grandkids or children, whoever's graduation, or you have to tie it to something that really matters to you. For some people, just actually, especially when we're talking about women, women usually put everybody else and everything else first. So maybe it's deciding, you know what, I'm worth it. And the first place I'm going to start, if I'm going to, the beautiful thing is that it doesn't matter where you start. It's that if you start in one of the places, mental, if you start mindset, if you start in being aware of your emotions and switching it, if you start in behavior, I'm going to skip the donuts or the coffee and I'm going to actually go for, you know, maybe I'm going to do a green drink or something that actually could give me some real energy. Whatever area that you choose, if you start that one area, the other ones will follow because you're going to start the inertia. So pick the most important spot that's the most important to you. And then, you know, that your reason why. And then we love the, I know you know who says it, but it's the 5-4-3-2-1. And it's basically when you're in a thought of couch or get up and go to the networking group, 5-4-3-2-1. And on one, you get up, whether that's getting out of bed, whether that is whatever it is you don't want to do, give yourself countdown. And that is an immediate nudge to do that.
No hitting snooze.
No hitting snooze.
So I love the concept of the New Year's resolution. Mm-hmm. I don't know who came up with it, but it was like the most brilliant idea that works the worst. So if you think about it, how many people have made New Year's resolutions? Everybody does, mm-hmm. but nobody sticks with them. And everybody has this thought that, well, at the start of the new year, I'm going to change. I'm going to be a different person. Well, it's just another day, right? The calendar really doesn't make a difference. So this whole concept of New Year's resolutions has been just so on top of my mind. And I started to think, you know, as Kathleen was saying, what makes somebody change? Where does that desire come from? And it has to be internal. Mm-hmm. It has to be deep within you, or else your change is hard. Nobody likes change, right? So there has to be something deep within you that's going to inspire you to be committed to this. And the way we start off our Secrets of Six-Figure Women workshop is by having each participant write their vision story. So take the time to think about, what is the life you want to create? What does that dream look like? You know, and think big, but really make it meaningful to you, inspiring to you. And that's the starting point for change. Because if we don't have something clear and realistic and compelling to work towards, then we're going to, you know, as soon as it starts getting hard, or as soon as, you know, we get sick of having salads every day and we see those, you know, nacho chips, or we see our friends having a glass of wine and we've been denying ourselves for so long, that's it. Like, it's broken, right? So we need something that really strongly inspires us to change. And then just one step at a time, one little thing, and keep practicing and practicing it. So now it becomes an unconscious habit. Yep.
I know that you do this, this ties into this. You are also involved with some mastermind groups. So the whole concept of surrounding yourself with positive people and make your environment more likely that you'll stay on track to do these kinds of things. I'm assuming that's a key benefit of something like a mastermind group.
It is huge. So I always like to say, you know, women are creatures of community. We have always worked well in communities. We've always thrived in communities. And then all of a sudden we start our own businesses and we think that we have to go into our own corner by ourselves and figure it all out. And if we don't do it well, then we're a failure, right? Women specifically stop themselves from asking for help because those limiting beliefs come up.
Somebody will think I'm not smart or I'm not capable or I'm an imposter, or I'm a fake, whatever it is. And the concept, I mean, the concept of bringing women together is just like a no-brainer, right? Let's step back into what has made us so great from history and bring it into our lives in today and share experiences, share feedback, help each other in the safe space to get past those challenges, those limiting beliefs, that whatever is holding you back from achieving greatness. So you're not wasting your time trying to figure it out. You're not avoiding those hard things. At the end of the day, business is business. It doesn't matter what industry you're in. Business is business. We're all trying to get more clients. We're all trying to make more money. We're all trying to impact the lives of others. So why not come together in a safe, non-competitive environment as women and help each other, raise each other up? It's like a no-brainer to me.
Oh, I totally agree. And I think when we use these tools, I'm going to guess the answer to this question, but would you say we ever get rid of our limiting beliefs?
They are part of us. Our beliefs are what make us human beings. They separate us from all those other species. So the trick is not to get rid of them, because they're never going to go away. You know, I always say that Ivy, when I figure out that she's saying something, she's going to find a different way to say it. You know, she's going to whisper something wonderful and beautiful in my ear. And I'll go, oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, wait a second. That's what you were saying in a different way before. So it's a matter of being in control, being conscious, like Kathleen was saying, being aware and empowering yourself to choose.
Cindy, it goes back to what you're saying about safe environment,
mm-hmm.
right? When I'm working with companies, one of the things is to help people understand that everything we are on a neurological level, not under our conscious awareness, we are evaluating whether or not we're safe all the time. And we are reacting according to that. So when I work with companies and work with groups in their businesses, having the skill sets to be able to switch yourself when you've just gotten triggered where your nervous system took something as I'm not safe, into being able to switch that so that you can now work from that collaborative space, because that is the bottom line of everything. So when you're in your workshops and your mastermind groups, that's you create that safe space for women. And that's why for me, I have so much fun working with companies, especially conscious companies who are culture-minded, who really get that their people are, it's not the, you know, every CEO in the world would tell you that their people are their greatest asset. And they'll kind of say it like that. Yes, they're my greatest asset. And let me check the box on, yes, I did a walking challenge, right? And that's great. You already heard me say I like walking. But it's really, you have to be able to get people, give them the tools that are at the deeper level of who we are. We are a conscious being that has this body and this mind and this heart. If you understand how they work, you can use them to fulfill your potential, right? And so that's the beautiful thing about working in organizations, in business, is what happens when people are their best. They're actually free to be and do their best. And when you can teach everybody, oh, I can switch myself. And now, because of that, we're on board. And now we can actually really carry out this mission that we all feel so passionately about. It's extraordinary. We are, the facility and the capacity that we have as individuals is extraordinary. And when we understand how they work, how our mindset works, right? How, what our limiting beliefs are, and what we have that's already within us that we can utilize to improve that, to enhance that, then, I mean, that's, how exciting is that, right? I mean, what can we do for society? It makes my day. It excites me.
You know, I want to build on that because, you know, in corporate environments, it really comes down to leadership.
Yes.
You know, how leadership can trigger limiting beliefs, create limiting beliefs, create environments where people do not thrive, but they live in that fight or flight type of environment. And, you know, I'm a big proponent about changing the model of leadership.
Yes.
We have this hierarchy that, you know, we are supposed to climb that corporate ladder. And what does that look like? It's climbing over people, stepping on top of them, pushing them off the ladder, whatever it takes to get ahead. And it's all focused around money. And it's a very aggressive energy. And it's very exclusive, right? So if we can redefine leadership, I have this definition that I share with a lot of business leaders that I work with. And it's seeing leadership as an energy or a mindset that stems from passion and purpose, that empowers each person to be their personal best so they have a positive impact on the lives of others. So what does that mean? It means that all of a sudden, everybody has the ability to be a leader.
Yes.
Everybody is looking to support each other, and not just externally to have a positive impact, but internally within the organization to have a positive impact on the lives of others. And everybody has the opportunity to show up as their personal best and continuously raise the bar and have people surrounding them to honor that. So if we just started with that definition in organizations,
yes,
and leaders, the ones at the top in those C-suite, you know, nice offices, really own that.
It's so powerful.
What would happen?
It's so powerful. I have to tell you, in working with some of the companies I worked with, it has been remarkable when the leaders themselves get a handle on themselves, on their nervous system, and being able to operate from there, because leaders set the culture. And it's so exciting.
Yep, absolutely.
Lots of possibilities for impact. We have talked about lots of things. As I listen in general, and today is no different, I try to nutshell some key takeaways for me. I think the brain tends to remember things in threes, so I try to identify for myself three key takeaways. So I'd like to share what some of those thoughts were for me, and then have you add to or tweak maybe what I've said, to be sure we're helping our listeners get the gist of what you think is going to be most beneficial to them. And then certainly be sharing, how can people reach you? What is the best way to contact you and find out more about what you do in your wonderful businesses? So Cindy, I'll start with you. From the standpoint of, you know, your business rescue coaching, I'm hearing the whole why. Identifying your value and your vision has to be a key starting point before you even talk about how do you change and what needs to be changed. So the importance of really knowing your why and what your values are was one key reminder. The whole creature of communication, or
crazy
or
lady women, in the attic.
Women being creatures of community. I think that's a great reminder to women that we don't have to put our nose down and do it ourselves. Mm-hmm. So surrounding ourselves, whether it's a mastermind or networking or whatever it is, hugely important. And then third is that we're all leaders, and we can focus on that. How do we positively impact others? The world could be such a better place in such a hurry. So
beautiful.
Thank you for all three of those. But anything to add or tweak, I appreciate you clarifying as well.
No, I love the way you've summarized everything. And, you know, it's really about closing that gender gap of income, elevating women and helping them shine and live in their magnificence, because they're incredible people.
Lots of opportunity for impact. And again, sharing the best way for listeners to find you and learn more about your Secrets of Six-Figure Women and other wonderful things coming up?
Yep. Just visit my website, www.businessrescuecoaching.com. All of our events and programs are on our calendar, which is at our events page. And there's a way to contact me directly through our website. So thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. And Kathleen, when we are talking about the motion side of things, I'm reminding myself you're educating us that emotions release chemicals, and that whole body-mind can be our best friend, knowing that.
Yes.
So that was a huge turn of mind for me to recognize, change that into a positive, not just a negative realization that that's what happens. Breathing and moving, huge key every day, even every hour, as you suggested, in our sedentary sit-at-our-desk lifestyles with these darn computers. And then lastly, the same, the why concept, knowing why it matters so that you at least have a motivator before you start on whatever it is that you're going to change.
Right. That's great.
So if you could encourage people with all of your motion training that you do to master one thing, would there be a one thing? Because I know there's so many.
Yes.
And you touched on several.
self-awareness, and learning how your body-mind works. Because it's applied knowledge that is power.
Yes.
You have to know what it is in order to be able to apply it.
And how best to reach you and find out more about what all you're doing in the world?
Same thing for me. My website, which is my name, www.KathleenGramsey, and that's KathleenGramzay.com.
Excellent. Well, I can't tell you both how appreciative I am of this inaugural podcast, where we're hoping to have much more fun and information and really what do I do with it now kind of opportunities for our women listening out there. And so we encourage people to share. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Mind Money Motion, where we share how to worry less about money by taking care of our mind and our body. You can visit us at mindmoneymotion.com or find Mind Money Motion on Facebook. Please join us next time for less worry, more life. I'm Marie Burns.